Before we go into more detail and discussion, I would like to invite Rachel Heyman from InTrack, welcome, to comment on Richard's presentation and the recommendation highlighted in his report. Rachel Heyman is head of research at InTrack with expertise in international development aid and policymaking, as well as civil society, democratization, and governance. Rachel has a background from the Center of African Studies at the University of Edinburgh. And InTrack, I'm sure you all know, but is an international NGO training and research center in Oxford who has presented a number of overviews and analyses on the shifts in civil society, as well as legal frameworks and changes in political space. Among them, the report, Civil Society as a Crossroad. Please, Rachel.
Okay, thank you very much, and thank you for offering me the possibility of responding to what is an extremely interesting report, very topical and very relevant at this particular moment. And it resonates extremely with so many of the issues that InTrack is engaging with. So thank you very much for the invitation, and thank you for that introduction to what we do. This report sort of links my past as an academic working on aid effectiveness and governance issues with my present working to support civil society globally. And we work with not just NGOs and CSOs, but also with the civil society departments of donors as well. So as I say, I'm trying to do two presentations at once. So I really welcome this report, and what I'm going to do is quite briefly just respond, firstly, picking up a few to the body of the report, picking up on a few points, and then I'm going to respond more specifically on the five recommendations, and perhaps that gives us an opportunity to talk about those in a bit more depth and also sort of push some of those a little bit further based on some of our thinking. Firstly, as I say this, this report very much resonates with what we've been doing. And I think Richard does a laudable attempt at trying to cover a vast terrain of civil society activity in very many different parts of the world. And I know that's an extremely difficult job to do. I think it raises that huge challenge that we're seeing within the NGO sector of how to engage with this very broadened concept of civil society. We're finding NGOs sort of rediscovering the need to work much more beyond the sort of traditional domain of the donor to INGO to local partner relationship, finding ways to work with unions, grassroots organisations, and horizontal relationships between like-minded organisations, much more engagement with private donors in the private sector as well. So it's a very sort of difficult environment for NGOs at the moment. At the same time, we would certainly sort of emphasise that over time, of course, INGOs have been very present in a lot of the big protest movements up until this time, but they seem to be facing a bit of a crisis of both legitimacy and identity. And that's what we're finding organizations struggling to cope with. There's a lot of criticism of them, both at home and in their work in different countries as well. So we're seeing a lot of debate about the future role of INGOs, their added value to civil society globally, but also to democracy and to development. So we're finding NGOs starting to re-identify themselves, redefine who they are. Are they social enterprises? Are they global movements themselves? Are they associations? Are they not NGOs? So that's sort of the first point. That's really that resonance. The second point, the report really emphasises the impact of the legal restrictions and the shrinking space for civil society. Where I would sort of push it a little bit further is thinking about the unintended consequences or the unintended, perhaps, impacts of the reductions in aid, particularly in emerging economies and middle-income countries, which is having a knock-on impact for NGOs who are turning to more government contracts, who are turning to alternative sources of funding, and that's actually starting to shrink their ability to be engaged in advocacy-style work and human rights-style work. So this is even in those countries, I think as Richard's saying, which are more democratic, the funding of more critical human rights-based work is much more hard to come by. So that's sort of an aspect. It was well sort of away from the repressive environments that we're seeing coming through. I have a slight concern, thirdly, around sort of trying to just focus on the democracy activities and the democracy-related civil society roles. Because although the report does touch on this, I think it does bypass what we would see as quite a core function of civil society, of NGOs, which is about creating the social basis for democracy. By creating the environment in which citizens do gain a voice, they're active, they take responsibility, and they're holding those with power to account. We need to be careful that that sort of action isn't undermined by focusing too strongly on democracy per se. So we're very concerned about trying to separate too much out the sort of democracy-related activities from, say, service delivery functions. And that dichotomy can sometimes be a bit problematic. I'm not saying that the report does this fully, but it does come across a little bit in the report. We find those lines extremely blurred. There are some NGOs and civil and development activities that have very service delivery function, very charity-oriented, welfarist in approach. But there's an awful lot that many NGOs are doing which crosses those lines and which is supporting sort of a democratic development, but from the grassroots up, and where you need to sort of recognise how service delivery and advocacy interrelate with each other. And finally, I think this leads to a very... a real conundrum that we see in the report about where does civil society stop and politics begin. It's a pattern that we see over and over again. It's very difficult sometimes to separate the sphere of practice between what we would call the kind of big P politics, that party activity in particular, from the little P politics, which is these processes of negotiation that are going on between power holders and civil society constantly. So that's a few comments on about what sort of struck me in reading the report. And just to sort of focus a bit more on the five recommendations. Again, there's a lot of resonance with issues that we're seeing in our work, so I really welcome these particular five points. I suspect that INTRAC would probably be cast as a Republican in Richard's typology, in that we are seeking to find project-level solutions and find ways in which we can help organisations to develop their relationships of trust with local authorities and power holders and not just sort of bang on the door from the outside. I think the main thing that struck me in looking at these recommendations were these very difficult choices that need to be made between sort of... are you present in a country or are you not? Do you take a political stance? Do you not? And my concern is that with some of the recommendations that civil society activists and NGOs might be the ones that end up in the firing line if those choices are not made very, very carefully. So firstly, thinking about the new actors and the bridge builders and this idea of pushing out from the middle, yes, I'd welcome that, but we think, I would say with care. It's important to reach beyond the usual suspects, and there are programmes that are doing this, programmes like the Civil Society Support Programme in Ethiopia, which Sweden is supporting. This can only happen with very deep knowledge of local contexts. And that doesn't work very well if you don't have a local presence on the ground or if you don't have good intermediaries to work with. So who decides what's a good or a legitimate protest movement? And we need to be very careful not to end up going too far in the direction of just making those decisions, which takes us into dangerous territory, I think. So on that point, really, we would say good to push out from the middle, but we also need to reinvigorate the middle ground. We also need to be sort of very careful about fragmentation. We would definitely welcome the ideas that we see in the report around greater capacity and flexible funding to engage with new actors. But that does require different types of presence and knowledge on the ground. So on to the second one about new actors and new models. We need to create more spaces for this reflection and this learning and this exploration about what's going on to understand the relationships that can be built between actors and the ones that cannot and where those ones would work best. One of the things that we think we need to do is really to push donors to work with non-Western thinkers. That should say non-Western, not Western, by the way. I'm noticing that. With non-Western thinkers, so that we can create a concept of democracy and civil society that is valued and recognised well outside of this Western, the Western frame of thinking. So definitely engaging with some of the newer democracies and the emerging actors as well. Because this also leads into helping to deal with this problem of the crisis of identity and legitimacy for NGOs as well. On the reopening, the recommendation around the reopening of closing spaces, this is where the conundrums really come to the fore about do you depoliticise support or do you politicise it more? Are you more overtly partisan or not partisan? Do you have an in-country presence or not? I think there is a danger of wrapping up democracy agendas with civil society support programmes. I think civil society support programmes are a very important channel for grassroots empowerment, for bridge building and civic activism. But we need to beware of democracy by stealth, because that's where the challenge then comes down on the NGOs and where we're putting actually some of these new actors at the greatest risk. So we definitely welcome the ideas around more flexible and innovative funding, but at the same time, many donors are not flexible and innovative. They're extremely risk-averse. And the NGOs in the room will be nodding their heads at this, because we are dealing with a huge clampdown when it comes to the results-based focus, accountability focus, and managerial systems. So, I think there are some interesting pots that sit actually outside of international development cooperation and with foreign embassies and foreign ministries, which are more flexible and innovative. And there is a question about whether these should actually be kept separate, because they do serve different purposes. But we need to sort of think about that a little bit more. I don't have much to say about support for ICTs, primarily because it's sort of a bit outside of my sort of general area of work, other than thinking about, as Richard points out, who is it that's excluded from these movements, particularly the poor, the marginalised, the vulnerable, are not part of these movements. And then finally, on the question about linking civil societies beyond protest, I suppose the slight concern there is also who do you bring together and for what purposes? Are we creating unnatural alliances? I think there's perhaps more scope in bringing together common, like-minded thinking groups. So with this, we certainly need to think about how can we fund organising and not just organisations. And we need to recognise that protest movements will come and go in quite quick succession, but really to build a strong civil society that is capable of bringing about lasting and sustainable social change is a long, hard slog. Thank you.
Hey, just one follow-up question to you. You mentioned that this highly complex world that is evident that both of you present demands quite rich knowledge of donors in terms of creating that flexibility and adjustment. How do you see that donors have that capacity, basically, to have that knowledge or to take in that knowledge? And how adaptable, from your experience, are actually donors to changing context?
I think one of the difficulties that we see is that there are a lot of donors that don't have a lot of presence on the ground, and Sweden is probably one of those. Mm. And I think that does create huge problems if you can't, if you're not able to really understand the dynamics of what's going on the ground. So would we be advocating a massive new influx of policy analysts in every difficult country in the world? Probably not. But I think we need to think about the pros and cons of a presence in country. where we would see there needs to be where donors do not have a presence in country, they certainly need to be working with other donors, and they certainly need to be working with good intermediaries and recognise that it's going to be, it practically, I think, is extremely, going to be very hard for Western donors to really engage well with some of these new movements. Mm-hmm. And certainly in the medium term, it's going to happen through established types of organisations. The challenge there is thinking, who do you work with and how do you work? There is a big trend towards trying to get more funding directly into the South versus civil society activism. How do you do that if you're not working? And there are mechanisms you can do it with, basket funds, multi-donor funds, and working with sort of trusted national partners, perhaps giving them a bit more of a grant-giving function as well. But, you know, the ability to really understand what's happening under the surface is one that we can't get around.
Thanks. I'll, of course, let also, when we have a panel, both government and CEDA respond to the questions raised. Well, thank you, Rachel. Of course.